everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. You know, there are times that all of us feel just a bit stuck in life. You know, doing the same things over and over again and finding ourselves unable to move forward toward the life that we really want. Well, our guest today, Jim Kiles, has written a book intended to give us hope for a new life as well as a very doable strategy to get there. Jim Kiles is the lead pastor of Anchor Bend Church and author of Unstuck and Unstoppable. Shake off the past, find your purpose, and get on with life. This book has reached number one status on Amazon's list of new releases. That's quite impressive. Jim is an entrepreneur, a real estate investor, and has worked with and trained thousands of leaders across the nation to get unstuck to reach their full potential. So with that, let's bring on our special guest, Jim Kiles. Welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. It is such a privilege to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of your show today.
Thank you. Well, we're looking forward to a good time. As my listeners know, I typically speak with my guest the week of the podcast just sort of to get to know each other and figure out a direction for the show. And I want to tell you how much I enjoyed our conversation about philosophy and theology. I don't always find people that can talk both, and it's always a pleasure to speak with another student of what I'm calling the art of living.
Yes. Well, I feel the same way. It's interesting, you and I, after the conversation, I left saying, I feel like I just gained a new friend. So I thoroughly enjoyed it and just excited to get to know each other and learn from one another.
Yeah, and that's what I plan today. We're going to mostly learn from you, but I'll ask questions, that's for sure, and give feedback here and there. But, you know, Jim, I'm loving the title of this new book of yours, Unstuck and Unstoppable. Can you tell me, is there any particular circumstance that drove you to write this book, or is it something you just have noticed in our culture for quite some time?
Well, that's a great question. The book actually was stemmed out of the last couple of years. Global pandemic, of course, happened in 2020. And I was stuck in the summer of 2020 and really just throwing a pity party. I think I've been stuck in certain seasons of my life, but at this point, I couldn't get out of where I was at. And I just went on a journey. I wasn't intending someone said, "You intend to write a book?" No, I intended to do whatever it took to figure out how to get unstuck. And in that process, really discovered some principles, some truths that not only worked for me, but I began to share with other people, and it resonated. And then out of that, people would say, "Hey, well, can you send something? Can you teach something?" And from there, the book was really birthed, and we've seen tremendous success from it. So, but really, the personal journey of I'm just tired of being.
Oh, so it was written from your heart. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Tell me something. Can you, you know, this is going to sound like an obvious question, but I think we need to address it right early on. How do you define stuck? Can we talk about what that, I mean, all of us have a feeling. All of us have this idea of what being stuck in life means, but I'm wondering from your perspective how you define that concept.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's another great question because, you know, life, how do I know if I'm stuck? Where do I identify it? And that's really the first thing that we have to do if we're going to get unstuck is look at the handles or the identifiers. And I think there's two things that really will help identify if someone is stuck. Number one, you'll hear someone say, "I feel hopeless" in an area. So, you know, of course, in life, most people don't ever get stuck in every area of life, but you've got relationships, so you've got your marriage, you've got finances, you have your health, you have your spiritual life. So there's all these different facets of our life. And when you start to hear someone say something like, "My marriage is hopeless, it will never get better," or I'll always be in debt. My finances, you know, will never be debt free. Or, you know, my health, I'll never be physically fit. I'll always be overweight. Those are real indicators that there is a part of your life where you have been stuck. And actually, you, when you begin to say hopeless or never, it actually, you've been stuck so long, you're actually feeling stranded, because that's what stranded is. Stranded is without hope. That's the first thing I always, when I'm coaching, I always say, let's identify if that language is being used in your life. Because that's going to begin to point us into the direction that we focus on. And that's a great way. Here's the second way, is that if you find yourself sabotaging yourself in an area of life, and the way I identify that is, you seem to go around that mountain over and over and over again in your life. You can see this in relationships. You'll find someone who has a fear of commitment, and so they sabotage relationships, whether it's romantic relationships or whether it's just intimate friendships. They bounce from friend to friend. They'll go so long with this friendship, and then that person has messed it up, so they go to a new friend, and eventually that person messes it up, and the blame is always on other people. I make excuses. We blame. Because if I do that, then I don't have to deal with the real issue, which is me. And so you'll see that in people's lives. Same thing for someone who bounces around from job to job. Maybe they stay at a job for a year, 2 years, 3 years, but it's a constant moving around. Well, that is a place where you're stuck. Whether you identify it or not, we can look at the remnants of your life, or the, you know, the what's being produced from your life, and say, hey, I think you're stuck there. There may be some pain and some trauma in your past that you've not dealt with, so now it's secretly sabotaging your life, and you're stuck in the area of relationships, or you're stuck in the area of a career. And so those are two of the best ways that I have found to quickly assess.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I really identify with being stuck is as much internal as it is external. I don't know if I'm ready to say more. I would say probably more internal than external, but it is as those two concepts of the external impacts on us from the outside and the internal, what has happened to us in our history of experience that has caused us to interpret that external as a personal attack, when it's not always personal, is it?
That's exactly right. Well, you and I had such a great conversation the other night. This is exactly what we're talking about. We don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. It's our filter. It's our paradigms. And so it's not as important what happens to you. It's not as important as to what happens in you. Because
Wait a minute now. Hold on. That's a very profound comment. It is not what happens to you. It is what happens in you. You're going to need to expand on that, because I think that's a very powerful idea.
Well, this is where we become empowered too, right? Because if it's only about what happened to us, now we're victims to our circumstances.
Right.
But it's not what happens to us. It's more important what happens in us, which is where you can find two people have basically the same experiences happen in their life, and one turns to drugs and a life of crime, and another starts a nonprofit that changes the world. What's happened? Well, it's not a difference of external circumstances. It's a difference of what's happened inside of them. It's how they've responded. It's their path that brings, you know, if they've had victories in the past or different things that have said, no, I'm not going to go down the path of drugs and alcohol. I'm going to actually make a difference. And so what happens in us is always way more important, and it's empowering, right? If I realize it doesn't matter what happens to me, it's only how I respond. Well, now I can take the control back of my, the control of my life back. I don't want to live as a victim, and I choose to not. And that's how internally I'm recognizing if there's a problem that's being demonstrated in my life, where is that problem inside of me? How can I own it and say, probably stems from some pain of my past that needs to be healed and resolved. And the more healed we are, the more the pain is resolved, the less we react in situations and circumstances, and we begin to learn to live life, you know, proactively. I'm not going to react, I'm going to respond, and I'm going to be intentional in my responses. I'm not going to be triggered and just be reactive. That's how we end up 20, 30 years down the road of our life with nothing but a life of regrets.
I tell you, Viktor Frankl's In Search of Meaning, isn't that the title of the book, In Search of Meaning? And, you know, I have lately been using that reference so much, and that Viktor Frankl said, you cannot control your situations or your circumstances, but you can control how you respond to it. So that is your story of the two different children raised the same in the same situation. It was a choice. It comes down to choosing, but sometimes that choice is not so obvious, is it? Because it's not just that simple. When you have, you know, I know you talked about counseling and therapy, and I think that is so helpful, because when you have very challenging childhood, you know, you really can. It's easy to go either way, because it is so impactful, because that is going to the core of our identity, who we really are and what we really are. We, I hate these terms, but I'll use them, a good person or a bad person, a helpful person, or even a victim. Things always bad happen to me. And you're suggesting that doesn't have to necessarily be so, aren't you?
That's exactly right. Well, and we get to be the owners of our life. Bad things happen all the time, and they're going to happen. Why? Because we live in a fallen world with people that make mistakes, and things are not going to make sense. You're going to have bad people who are going to prosper. You're going to have good people that are going to suffer. And what we want to do is just say, look, I would like to be, you know, in a great environment where lots of great things happen, but even if they don't happen, I'm still going to respond in a positive way and let my life be a positive life for the world to see and to make an impact that matters, which I know your listeners and you and I have talked about. You want to live legacy. You want to live a life that makes a difference. We've been so blessed. We want to help others that are less fortunate, and to have our life have mattered and been lived for something great.
You know, you talked to me, as we're learning about this idea, you talked to me about being stuck and the lessons you learned from COVID. Can you tell me more about how feeling stuck and the interrelationship between feeling stuck and the COVID pandemic, you know, what happened for that 2 or 3 years?
Absolutely. Well, I didn't realize the mentality that I had begun to adopt and how the pandemic had affected me and the way I was viewing the world. And so what I realized was while we were all asked to stay home to slow the spread, which we did and we were glad to do it, nobody knew that when they told us, I live in Texas, I know you're in California, but in Texas, it was literally like, hey, we'll be back in 2 weeks. So walking into that, of course. Now, it didn't last 2 weeks. In fact, we literally, everything was basically shut down here for 5 months. I know California, other places, maybe a little bit more. But we couldn't even really get out at all. Well, I personally walked into that situation with the absolute wrong mentality. And so I let my guard down.
Let me interrupt, because I think we will get into it briefly. I don't want to get into it too deeply, but I think it's very, very significant. Are you free to talk about the financial challenges that hit you at that time and just how difficult, or is that sort of confidential information?
I think everybody was hit by, you know, the financial challenges and struggles and.
Because you had a lot going on with your church at that time that was very important.
Absolutely. So we were raising money. Well, this is where you and I were talking about. I am a pastor. I wear many hats. I'm an entrepreneur, an author, podcaster, pastor. But one of the privileges I get is to pastor a group of people. And we have been portable for 7.5 years. And we were buying a multi-million-dollar building and doing all the things that it takes to raise a lot of money to buy the building. And That was at the end of 2019, and COVID hit in March of 2020. We were supposed to close on the building in April of 2020.
Oh,
and we had raised a lot of the money, but not all the money.
Right.
And so part of that frustration is you're caught in the middle of a storm that you didn't create. And here we are, you know, a church by nature is public, you know, so that's how you build community. That's how you gather people. So all of a sudden we're shut down into how do you build a church that is community based when you can't even leave the front door of your house? And how do you raise money for a building that you can't even sit in?
That is feeling of somewhere being stuck and being victimized. I mean, that's a scary feeling.
It is, and then we were right in the middle of it. So we had raised just over half the money. We were still supposed to close, and you now have a choice. Am I going to be a victim? Are we going to keep moving forward? Are we going to just quit? Are we going to stop? I mean, are we going to be at home for the rest of our lives? Well, the answer is no. So you have to say, okay, the feelings that I have are valid. The struggles that we're faced with, they're valid. But there is a solution somewhere. And even if we didn't, which I'm going to give the backside of that, I'm actually sitting in my office in our brand new campus that we were able to purchase, and our church is thriving. We, you know, lots of services, we're growing. So that's on the backside. But in the middle of all this, it's like, well, even if we don't get it, I'm not going to miss it because I quit. I'm not going to lose that opportunity because I decided to throw a pity party and feel sorry for myself. And then that was just one of the, I mean, you and I talked about it. Who knew? And I'm sure the parents that are listening to the podcast, who knew that 2020 we would all become homeschool parents?
Right.
Right. And I got four kids. So I've got a church that now is not able to meet on site. We go online. I'm homeschooling four kids. It's just your everything in your life. And so it really was a test. And out of that, though, was birthed the book, Unstuck and Unstoppable, because it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing when you really have to live it out. And you're like, I'm going to figure it out. Like there. And here's what's so cool, that in the midst of those struggles, in the midst of those trials, when you do find a path, that it's amazing how now you get to be the one that helps bring others down that same path. So I could just imagine someone listening right now, and they're like, hey, I'm not in the middle of the pandemic because it's over, but I know what that feeling of overwhelm is and stuck is, and I want you to know there is help. You don't have to stay that way. And I will tell you this, Charlie, part of my thing was I had to stop blaming and I had to stop making excuses. Excuses only validate your reality. It doesn't validate the true reality. And that's where I really had to come to grips with, okay, am I going to blame a pandemic? There's got to be some solution somewhere. And at what level can I take responsibility? And that was really where everything changed, when I stopped blaming, when I stopped making excuses, and started to just say, I'm going to take responsibility for what I can do. And some days, it was just little by little. You know, I wish I had a huge victory all the time, but some days half the battle was just getting up.
Yep.
I actually talk about it at the back of the book. In chapter 12, I do some hacks, and one of my hacks that I learned was, sometimes you just got to go to sleep. At the end of the day, don't make any major decisions because the grace that you had is almost gone. And so I've learned to make good quality, hard decisions at the beginning of the day because I'm rested, my grace is new, I'm fresh. And what I found was every day I wanted to quit in the evening, when I went to bed and got some sleep, and for me as a pastor, I was saying, God, my problems are yours. I'm going to bed. When I woke up, it was amazing how much my decision in the morning was totally different than the one the night before. And that was something that changed me as well. I could say, I quit. I don't want to do it. Well, go to sleep. Okay, God, this is yours. I'm going to wake up. And in the morning, I'm like, all right, I got this. I can do it. I got one more day. All I got to do is go one more day. And that would walk me through that situation. So that's a little hack that I talk about that was a valuable lesson that I've learned.
You know, it's also, you mentioned the word, but I find in the people that I have coached and worked with that there's blaming circumstances, but it's also a lot with leaders that I know. It becomes blaming people. And, you know, people are not following my edicts, my way. They want to do it their way. And they're the reason that I'm not accomplishing what I want to accomplish. And that's also not very helpful. It doesn't build relationships, and it doesn't cure any of the problems that we're facing.
It really doesn't. Well, and that, I'm sure you probably have. You're such a great coach. I mean, I'd love to learn even what your thoughts are on that. I know those are different podcasts, but that's a whole other can of worms. It's like we will always have the ability to be able to invite people into our life and to be able to ask people to get out of our life.
Yes, that's a great idea, because people don't talk about getting people out of our lives. And I call them the very drain. Bill Hybels taught me to classify three different kind of people. There's the replenishing people, the neutral people, and the VIPs, or the VDPs, the very draining people. And you need to extricate yourself from the very draining people. Draining people are just not going to do you any good.
Nope.
And they will be roadblocks that lead you to being stuck. Now, in your book, now I wonder if this has to do, if these four building blocks, are these four essential building blocks, are they sort of a remedy or sort of a beginning or a ground step to attaining the ability to get unstuck? The four building blocks that you write about, is that sort of the function of them to get a good ground to build upon?
That's a great question. So what I talk a lot about in the first part of the book is why we get stuck, identifying some of the reasons. The four essential building blocks of life that you're referencing, that you and I have talked about, and I know you've read in the book, where these are ways to really not only get unstuck, but really to become unstoppable. Because that's my goal. That was the reason the title, you know, we worked hard on the title, because at first it was all about just getting unstuck. But now, can we? Is it possible to build a life? Not that you never get stuck, because I think we're always going to get stuck. And I find myself, there's moments where I feel stuck, but I don't have to stay stuck. And that's how you become unstoppable. And I talk about the four essential building blocks of life that we need to focus on and build if we want to experience this. Is number one, it's your identity.
Let me just tell you one thing that, you know, I want you to give a brief overview of all of those, but
yep.
After talking, I want to focus on vision. So you know that I want to spend time on vision. I really, as you talked about that, I think that is really powerful. But let's go through identity, purpose, and paradigm as well.
That's right. And just so those that are listening, the first one is identity. Who am I? Your purpose is, what am I called to do? What am I supposed to be doing right now? Which is a valid question, because there's this whole movement of the Great Resignation where Americans and people live in Canada, all across the world, are evaluating, do I want to keep doing what I'm doing? And so they've called it this Great Resignation, and that's what they're doing with their life. What am I supposed to do? What's my assignment? And I like what's happening, but I would also caution with that, because just because you don't like it doesn't mean you don't need it. And so we got to be real careful about the Great Resignation if it's because I don't like this season of building character, and, you know, it's hard and I want to go do something easier and something a little more sexier. You know, there's a lot of seasons in my life and yours as well where we did things that we were supposed to do that we didn't necessarily like to do or even want to do, but it developed us to be the men that we're called to be. But anyway, so that's purpose. The third area is vision. Where am I going? So I need something to pull me past my day of pain. I know who I am. I know what I'm supposed to do. But if I don't have a vision for the future or a vision for what I'm supposed to be building in this area, I'll get stuck in my day of pain. And then the last one is paradigm. This is the subconscious pattern of thought. So It's the habit of thinking. It's the way I think when I'm not thinking. We have anywhere from 12,000 to 60,000 thoughts in a day. 80% of them are negative. 95% of them are repetitive. So when you evaluate that, you are right now whatever subconscious and unconscious and conscious thoughts that you have throughout the day. That's the life you're living. And so that's the four essential building blocks of life.
I get the 95% are repetitive, but 80% of our thoughts are negative?
According to the National Science Foundation, isn't that fascinating that we have a propensity to the negative? And then that goes back to vision of what you and I talked about. We create what we envision. So whatever I'm beholding, whatever I imagine, whatever I see, whatever I have a vision of, that's what you're going to build in your life, consciously, subconsciously, and unconsciously.
You told me something about vision that really, you know, I wrote it down and underlined it, but I thought it was very strong, is that vision pulls you into the future. And that gets you out of this stuck to say there is some place I can go, and then I need to, you know, to create a methodology, a plan, a strategy, ideas of how I can get there. But this is what gives me hope, is the vision of a better future in it. And, you know, I think so much because, you know, we have this American dream. And we have this American dream that, you know, the vision is big house, big car, big money. And the vision needs to be one of authenticity, of being aligned with my core being, of being aligned with the important people in my life, aligned with the higher authority. We call that higher authority God. Other people refer to it in different ways, but there is a higher, you know, we both believe in a higher power. And when we have those things working for us, unstuckness becomes a lot more possible of attaining.
Right, right. Well, it's so true. Here, you know, a house doesn't make a home. You know, stuff and money doesn't give you peace. So, joy. Yeah, you got all the. So we're chasing after the wrong thing, and missing it the whole time. It's right in front of us. But vision is the ability, and I love, you know, how you're talking about. It helps you to get beyond today. Helps you see beyond the present reality into a future reality. Let me explain why that's important. You and I are business guys, and I know we've got lots of business entrepreneurs and leaders that are listening to this podcast, and we've heard the term vision in our business, in your organization, even me as a pastor in my church, we got a vision. But where we fail to miss the power of vision is not just a one and done in one area. You got to have a vision for your marriage. So if you're struggling in your marriage right now, and you and your spouse, I mean, you just are constantly at each other's throat, can't hardly stand each other, or maybe it's just a passive relationship and there's no life in it, no excitement, no passion, and you, whatever situation, you feel hopeless. The problem in that situation is when you're stuck for long enough time, now you feel stranded, you feel without hope, all you can see is your present reality. So there is no ability to produce a future. In fact, if you've ever counseled people, I've counseled people on marriage problems, and, hey, tell me about why you married this person. Well, a lot of them say, I don't even know why I married them. It's so bad. All they can see is the pain of today. They couldn't even see the joy of yesterday. And so what they have to break out of is, hey, there is a possibility. If we were to have a perfect marriage, what would that look like? Here's a vision of it. And what will begin to happen if they just begin to see beyond today and create a reality in the future that they would see as, man, that is the goal? They will begin to subconsciously, unconsciously, and consciously now have hope fill their heart, expectation that there may be a brighter future, because now we're going to put some feet to this plan, but I can see it. I can see the future, and there is a possibility, and there is more beyond the pain of today. And it's an amazing power how vision is so powerful. So you need a vision for your marriage. You need a vision for your finances. You need a vision for your family. You need a vision for your health. You need a vision for your spiritual. So now when you begin to diagnose, am I stuck? Okay, cool. All right, okay, I'm stuck spiritually. Okay, well, what's the vision spiritually? You believe in God? What would that look like? If you believe in a higher power, what does that look like? So it's the fact of seeing beyond today and saying, okay, that's what unstuck would look like. Because only you can identify what unstuck looks like. That's why I can't go out and say, well, if you have X, Y, Z, then you're unstuck.
Right, right. It's so situational.
What does unstuck look like to you? Well, that's your vision. And that's a great place to start. And, of course, you'll refine it and get better at it. But it's such a powerful tool to help you move forward and at least start taking steps to get unstuck, even if it takes a little bit of time.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, you know, I want to make a comment on this. And I think people are aware of it, but it bears repeating because my wife and I just did this week before last. For over 30 years, we get together between Christmas and New Year's, and we spend 5 days, 4 nights, or no, 4 days, 3 nights, and we get together it's just our personal retreat. We go to a place that's us by ourselves, no one is joined, no family, no friends, and we spend time just kind of catching up on what's going on, but we actually... Jim, we actually talk about, okay, how was I as a husband last year? How was I as a wife next year? What would you like to see me do? What would you like to see different in what's going on? And that has, you know, we've like everybody else, we've wrestled through our marriage, but we've had opportunity to talk about it. And it's come to the table rather than just sort of lying dormant in some ugly part of our psyche that just creates. But you know, people have said, can you send us a model? Can you send us, you know, what do you do on this? You know, what are your tactics? I said, we just talk. We just, you know, there is no model. There is no format. It's just talk about who do you want to be and what do you want to do. So you know, that
is interesting that's half the battle. It's just a conversation. And you and I know this. It's not experience that is great. It's evaluated experience. You know, okay, we had a great year. Okay, let's evaluate. Was it good? Was it bad? How could I be better? And taking the time. Wow, that's powerful. Well,
thank you.
Need to write something, and you need to give us some of the tools.
There are no tools. We sit together in BS. So let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about some exciting things.
Sounds great.
Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you are listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. My special guest today is Jim Kiles, who is a pastor, entrepreneur, author, podcaster, and has written this, I think, very powerful book titled Unstuck and Unstoppable, that if you can get to the if you can get past your stuckness, there is so much possibility in your future that you can move forward. And I want to spend the rest of our time in the podcast talking about how we move forward. And there are, to move forward, we have to overcome certain obstacles that have seemed to, self-sabotaging is one of them. And let's because we sabotage on our own because of our fear. You know, I've often said, you know, especially like of women in abusive situations, a bad known is better than any unknown. We are afraid of the unknown. At least we can identify and clarify and understand what the bad known is. But the unknown, you know, we have this fear that it could be worse. We need to move on. So we get into this mindset of where I don't really deserve this. this is not a conscious thought. This is an unconscious thought. And I know you're a major advocate of therapy and counseling, and that is where therapy and counseling can help. But that there is a side of us that so fears being unstuck and being the decider of our faith, of our fate, that it makes it very difficult to move forward. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would absolutely agree. You know, some people, isn't it interesting how when you evaluate your life and your upbringing against other people, it's easy for us to always look at everybody else and say they're dysfunctional. And then have you ever been the one, I know I was, I wake up and I'm like, oh, no, we're pretty dysfunctional. But it was my normal. It was what I knew. It was what was growing. I grew up in. So my dysfunctional was comfortable, even though at some places it was painful. And that's what I found, is that until the pain of where you're at is greater than the pain of where we got to go, then you're just going to stay in your dysfunction and self-sabotage.
That is so astute. That is really, I like that a lot.
But that's why it takes a crisis many times for us to finally break down and get the help that we actually need. Because it's a cycle of bad choices. It's a cycle of repeated failures. But that cycle is still all that we know. And so it does take a certain element of tragedy or pain that then says, now I got to get out of here because I can't handle this anymore.
Or it could be the death of a thousand knives. You know, there is that one tragedy that, you know, we in Alcoholics Anonymous call it hitting the bottom, and that you hit this bottom, and when the bottom finally hits and you say, I've got no way out of this thing, I've got to make serious changes or my life is going to be over. But there is an accumulation. You know, sometimes it's not always just this hitting bottom. It is just this accumulation of what we feel are contributing factors to our stuckness, our inability to have the kind of life we want. And we just, and maybe that is the bottom. It's not a particular, oh, I got 5 DUIs. You got a bottom, you know, but this may not be 5 DUIs, you know, this may be, you know,
There's a point, that's right. Whatever that is, you know, whatever it is in that person, or in a person, but you are exactly right. And each of us get to that point different ways.
So give me an idea. You know, I was just thinking of something else, but give me ideas. Can you give me an example of self-sabotaging? How you've self-sabotaged in a certain situation?
Oh, absolutely. Well, so here would be a great example. I self-sabotaged in relationships, and even in my marriage. I've been married for 22 years to an amazing woman. First year was great. Then second and third, we almost didn't make it. I mean, it was terrible. And we dated when we were 15 and 16, so we'd had a relationship before. And then I was marrying my best friend. And what I realized through, you know, counseling and therapy later was that I had pain from the past sabotaging my marriage and the intimacy with my wife. I had an experience when I was 12 years old, and this, I write about it in the book, is where I realized I was sabotaging and destroying the one relationship that I craved and longed the most. I was 12 years old, I was playing baseball, and I was an athlete growing up. My dad had a restaurant and was an entrepreneur, and at this time he had a restaurant. He didn't come to many of my baseball games. But this game, he said, son, I'm going to be there. And I'm like, Dad, that is awesome. I'm really excited you're coming. I was batting in the fourth position, which is cleanup. I was the pitcher, the, you know, home run hitter.
You were the stud on the team. Yeah,
well, I was pretty good. And so I happened to be on the mat. You know, I was in the batter's box. Bases are loaded, and I'm batting fourth. So I'm sitting here with the opportunity to hit a grand slam. And lo and behold, I hit a grand slam. And two thoughts entered into my mind as I ran the bases. Number one, Jim, you're really good at athletics. You're really, in so many words, you're really athletic. You're really good. You're in the right spot. I'm feeling really good. So I never doubted my athletic ability after that day. In fact, I'm good. The other thing is, as I was rounding third base coming to the home plate, I'm looking for my dad, who said he would be there, and he wasn't there. And I had just recognized I had the biggest play I'd ever played, or, you know, hit I'd ever hit. My dad said he'd be here. He's not there. My dad doesn't love me enough to show up in my life. I'm not worth him showing up. And from that moment on, that thought was planted into my heart. Now, I didn't know this. I wouldn't have been able to consciously say it. But the lie was, you're not good enough. And everybody will eventually leave you because you're not good enough or worthy enough to be loved. If your dad can't love you and show up, they're all going to end up not showing up.
Do you know how many of us feel that way, Jim? I'm sure you do. This is, I think this is a common malady in the pursuit of the American dream.
It is a void that many find ourselves unconsciously and subconsciously trying to fill and sabotaging throughout the process. And it almost destroyed my marriage. And what I realized was that was a lie. My dad, and of course, you know, as an adult, you fight that a lot. You're like, my dad was, he just got busy. And of course, he apologized and all those things. But until I went back, and I had to identify, where does this feeling or thought come that I'm not worthy of love, and that eventually the people that I love are not going to show up? So here's how it sabotaged my marriage. You know, we've just been married a year, and I might as well push her away because she ain't going to show up for the rest of my life either.
Right.
Anyway, you know. And that's what you do, right? You start to subconscious.
Was that conscious or was that unconscious or subconscious?
No, had unconscious, yep. Had no, it wasn't until we got to a boiling point in our marriage and it was like it's either do or die. And we ended up going into intense therapy and counseling. And these lies were discovered for me, and she had some as well. But that was one that, man, I didn't know it was there. Nobody ever taught me anything about it. And I had to now consciously replace the lie. But if you're aware of the lie, now at least I could fight it. So many people are not even aware of the lie. You know, they may feel it or even think it, but they wouldn't know that that was the root of it.
But isn't that the value of therapy? I mean, that therapy helps you, forces you to go down deep into areas that not only are you afraid to go there, but you're not even aware that you need to go there until somebody who is a professional that says, perhaps we need to do some more investigating.
Absolutely. Well, and you and I talked about it. I've been in therapy for almost 10 years, and I was raised, the house I was raised in my teenage years, my mom became a licensed therapist. And so, I had the value of that journey at the beginning portion of my marriage, which was huge. And it's one of the reasons why, even with the book, I thought the book was going to be all about it. Chapter 10, 11 of my book is about paradigms, subconscious paradigms, and trauma triggers. Because you just don't hear people talk about it, unless you are in intense counseling and therapy. And yet, they sabotage our life. I mean, I wonder, like you said, how many of our listeners are reminded of a story or thinking about maybe a situation that could have happened in the past that's sabotaging a relationship now where they have that feeling. And here's, let me just say how.
And sabotage is out of self-protection. We must.
It is.
It's what? It's preservation. Yes.
Self-preservation.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But, and here's the thing that I found just as a quick resolution. If someone's listening saying, well, what do I do? Well, when you see a place where you're sabotaging, then you got to go back to what is the emotion that I'm feeling. So I'm feeling afraid. Why am I afraid? Well, because I'm afraid she's going to leave. And this was the words that I would say. Eventually, she's going to stop showing up. Well, where did that come from? So then you've got to go back to the first time you felt like somebody didn't show up in your life.
Mm.
Because it's always attached to a first. And so you go back to, and I had to process, well, where? Because, you know, when it first starts, you're like, this is stupid. Like, what do you think? I was 12. Of course my dad had to work. You know, as an adult, I don't fault him.
Of course
not. As a 12-year-old child, you don't know any better.
And you're just very disappointed.
That's right. So then I had to just then go back into work and say, "What? Man, I think I felt it when I was at that baseball game. And it's the one thing that stood out." And the beauty of it is, once you're aware of it, it's not that you'll never have that feeling. It's not that you'll never be tempted or even sabotage. It's like, no, that's not the right feeling. My wife loves me. She's not going to leave me. And I'm going to fight this lie. Well, then, because we create, if you're not careful, that sabotage happens because you're fulfilling a prophecy that you're the one doing it. So, of course, she leaves because you treated her like crap.
Yeah, that negative regressive spiral. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And so, look, we're going to have a lot of bad things happen in my life, but I don't want it to be because I subconsciously caused it. Right?
Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but you will. You will unconsciously sabotage, but you will learn from it more quickly now than you ever did. It's getting near the time to wrap up the show, but you know, I want to close it on a positive note. And your book is not, we've been dealing with getting unstuck, but you talk about unstoppable, and I would like to hear more about, are there steps to becoming unstoppable in our movement forward in our life?
There are. Again, I think it goes back to the four essential building blocks of life. We discover our identity, who we are. We discover what we're supposed to be doing, our assignment, our purpose. Then we discover the vision that we want in that area. And then, of course, we go back to I talk about paradigms, which is the subconscious pattern of thought. So you can know who you are, you can know what you're supposed to do, you know where you're supposed to go, but what are the patterns of thought in that area? And so if you can glean and work on and discover and create that in those areas, who am I, what am I supposed to be doing, where do I want to go, and what's the subconscious pattern of thought in, you know, whether that's your marriage, whether that's your finances, then what you'll find is now I've got a path that if I ever feel stuck, I know how to get unstuck. And it helps you to stay centered in it. And so it's not that you never get stuck, but look, if I got a plan and a path for my finances, then I just go back and identify where did I get off track. And so that has been the key, is really walking through those steps. And it works in business too, you know. Who are we as a business? What are we supposed to be doing? Where are we going? And instead of a subconscious pattern of thought or a paradigm, I just look at culture. Because culture is what happens all the time. It's who you are. It's what you say. It's what you're doing, what you're not doing. So the culture of an organization will determine whether or not you get stuck or not. And that's a whole, you know, I love business as well. So that's something that I'm working on as well. So
You love what as well? I didn't catch that.
Business.
Oh, business. Yes, 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 yes. You know, as I'm thinking, we may talk about a round two because we're not going to have time to get into this identity and purpose and vision and paradigm. But you know, my show is, I do a lot of shows on identity and purpose. And I don't think I can ever come to a conclusion on that because there are so many angles. And identity, I mean, you know, one of the things that we have is that in our faith tradition, we have identity in the divine and the holy, in which we identify as Christ, and we have identity in this human portrayal of love and of care and compassion and kindness, and that is an identity. But you know, there's also an identity that is steeped in who I am relationally, who I am vocationally, and it has a lot to do with that identity must be aligned with what we act, and that's called authenticity, and that we can, you know, in this overused word, authenticity, but that's my definition of authenticity, and that's an alignment with your identity as you perceive it, and now your purpose. People are looking for, there's this big thing, Jim, on purpose in it. You know, you've got to have this magnificent purpose, you know, that you know, has to change the world. And your purpose is, in my mind, is to make a difference in the lives of people to whom you are related. And And if you do that, you know, one author was quoted as saying, the purpose of life is to contribute to the value of society. And society includes your close society, that we are contributors. And as long as we're contributors, you know, sometimes our purpose is not given to us. We can determine our purpose. We don't wait for some email from God saying this is what your purpose is. We sort of get a feeling of what drives us, what our passions are, and say, this is what I care to do, and you know, and I'd like to talk to you much more about that.
Yeah. Well, I love what you said about authenticity and being true to your basically your values and who you really are. And what we've seen is people are not, which is why they have a crisis, you know, identity, you know, the character crisis. They're not living. It's almost like a fake life, and that's the problem with social media, right?
Nobody. Oh, it is, because
on social media, we're creating a whole subculture of fake fraud, and then wonder why we can't have businesses and churches and corporations and organizations that are true and authentic. Well, we don't live authentic lives. I think you're onto something. And it's needed. And when you see it, here's what's even more fascinating. When you see an authentic person, when you experience an authentic organization, it is refreshing. It's like, man, I don't know what it is, but I know you ain't perfect, but you're real, and it feels like you are being true to who you are, and it's much needed.
Well, Jim Kiles, you are such an inspirational and very, you know, I think you deeply understand this topic of being stuck, and then once we become unstuck, we're unstoppable, not in being rich and huge and famous, but in being a contributor to everyday life, leaving a legacy it's not in the world, I like to call it our world, your world.
Sure.
You have a world, I have a world. You know, and that's our circle of influence. And that's where we make our legacy. We don't make our legacy by being, certainly not by being Elon Musk. Although he is a fun character to follow just because he's so weird. I think there's so much to it, and I want to thank you for being such an inspiration and being so bold to come out and talk to us about how we might overcome this stuckness into becoming a significant, you know, that's what, you know, when you call unstoppable, a significant contributor to the lives and well-being of other people.
That's so good. Well, Charlie, it's been such a privilege, and just like I told you the other day, it's great to have a new friend, and I see that in you, and I'm just honored to have spent the time with your listeners and certainly have enjoyed it, so thank you.
Thank you. Tell me, Jim, how to get a hold of you? What's the best view?
Yeah.
Do you want listeners to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. They can go to my website, jimkiles.com. I do spell it J-I-M-M. And then kiles.com, and then they can look me up on social media. All of my handles are the same: Instagram, all the Facebook, anything. It's all Jim Kiles at Jim Kiles. So I'd love to hear from them and hear how they were touched.
I will put that in the show notes. It's funny. I just promised my last guest speaker, who is a new friend from Australia. And I told her I would put all of her social contacts on the social media, on my links, and I failed. So I have to go back and edit it, but all the links are out. So I will make sure I put yours in. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time on our show. And I want to also thank our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.